This is On Target St. John's, a look at politics, crime, education. What's happening here with the people who know? The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station. Now, your On Target St. John's host, Linda Swain.
Good afternoon, everyone. I trust you had a good weekend. It was a chilly one, wasn't it? Even though it was much nicer and the sun is higher in the sky, which is always good to see. Is it just me or are things ramping up in a big kind of way? I know, we're always saying things like that in the newsroom where it's a busy place anyway. And there's always a lot of big news on the go, but it seems like things have really ramped up. There's been a steady stream of major news announcements and events over the last few weeks as vaccines roll out. And one of the many issues that's been dominating public discussion, one of the many, many issues in the last little while, is the direction in which the province is heading, both fiscally and economically. The economic recovery team, led by Moya Green, has made a series of recommendations to try to address the fiscal situation while ensuring a prosperous future for Newfoundland and Labrador. That's received quite a bit of discussion and controversy, if you will. Well, my next guest has a role to play as the minister of a department that features prominently in those plans. Andrew Parsons is the minister of Industry, Energy and Technology. He joins me live on the phone. Hello.
Good afternoon.
So the last time we spoke, you and I, you were just getting your feet wet. A lot of the questions I put to you, you said, well, I'm going to have a look at that. So how are you settling in now?
Well, you know what? It very much was a case of getting thrown into the deep end, but it has been a really wonderful education. But more importantly, I guess what it helps with, I try my best to be an optimistic person anyway, but when I see just some of the different issues that I'm dealing with in the department, it gives me cause for lots of optimism. I mean, there's no doubt we have challenges. I mean, we've had challenges, you know, forever. And it's easy to get caught up in that. But I really do think there's a lot of silver linings out there. And thankfully, I'm in a department that gets to be a part of it and to see it. So it's been exciting. I'm really enjoying it. It's a huge department, but thankfully I'm surrounded by a lot of really, really great people, public service, and then all the groups and partners that you work with. So I guess what I'm saying, I'm spreading the message of positivity.
And I want to get into, you know, some of the exciting things that are happening, perhaps that a lot of people in the public domain are not overly familiar with, but we're going to start with some other things right now. How about the energy side of the portfolio? The Green Report referenced that oil and gas is the key to transitioning to a green economy. How do you see that working?
Well, I mean, the first thing I would say is that there's no doubt of a couple of things. That A, you know, we are obviously facing a climate change crisis. We do need to make change. We do need to ensure that we transition to a cleaner future. Little things like getting to net zero by 2050, I suppose it's not a little thing, but just even in the messaging that comes from government, that's somewhere that we've indicated we want to be. And just, you know, you think of here in Newfoundland and Labrador, that's our aspiration, but it is something that has been echoed by the federal government. And you only need to look south now and just see the huge changes that have come with the new administration and where they want to go. And that helps direct where we need to go. We need to be a part of that. We can't be fighting it. But, you know, I think there's a lot of good that comes with that. And I also don't think that it has to be mutually exclusive of where our resources are. So on the other side of that, one could say they're diametrically opposed. But, you know, we have a very strong energy sector, and that does include oil and gas. And that's going to include oil and gas. But I think you've seen a sea change in the sense that even the operators themselves, they know this. They're working towards that. When we look at groups like NOIA, who really is the spokesperson for this industry, a huge group made up of their partners, they see this and they're working with it. But when you can see partnerships and actual work that's being done between NOIA and you take a group like NEA, the Environmental Industry Association, they're partnering together. It shows we're going in the right direction. And I think with that responsibility comes a significant amount of opportunity.
I know there's been a lot of nautical themes going on lately, but can the oil and gas sector, or more importantly, I guess, the jobs that it represents, be salvaged, or has the boat already sailed on that?
Well, there's a bunch of different things at play. And, you know, and again, without getting into any order, I would say, what happens first, or I guess I'm just sort of just riffing here. What I would say is that I do think there's a future. I do think that there are going to be opportunities. When I look at some of our the finds that have been out there, when you look at Bay du Nord and what's going on, I see a huge, I think it's too significant to be ignored. When I look at how prosperous Hibernia and Hebron are, and when I look at the other fields, the other opportunities, I do think we have a way to get there. Two things I would say. The problem is that we have a lot of people that have been suffering since this all struck last year. And even just before that, you know, the Terra Nova was off a few months before the pandemic hit. And it's hard to tell somebody about a bright future when they're more worried about today. And so that's one of the contrasts and issues that we try to deal with. We've been working very diligently. We have the federal fund of money, $320 million, that we've put towards, you know, keeping projects warm, keeping work happening. We're trying extremely hard to make that happen. The other side, and again, you can get both sides of this. And I'm always careful because, you know, there are a lot of naysayers that tend to jump on anything you put out there. But there are opportunities to change direction. So I've had a lot of people call me and say, look, this is my field, my industry, but maybe I want to look towards somewhere else. Maybe I want to retrain or reprioritize. And I say, well, that's something we're willing to work with you with. And again, they don't need to be mutually exclusive. You don't need to talk about that. And then people say, well, you're giving up on this. We're not giving up on anything. We're trying our best to work with the issues that we have now, but also position ourselves to deal with the opportunities that are coming. So I guess that was the long answer. The short answer is I do see a future, but that doesn't mean that we're not going to go through, you know, again, continued difficulty in navigating that.
My guest today on Target is the minister who has one of the longest titles in the caucus, Industry, Energy, and Technology. We'll be back right after this.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
And my guest today is the Minister of Industry, Energy, and Technology, Andrew Parsons. And we've been talking a little bit about some of the things that are happening in that very busy portfolio. So what is the latest now on West Rite Rose, Bay du Nord, Terra Nova, on and on and on?
Well, I'll try my best to, I guess, do a roundup. Basically, I guess the first one would be Terra Nova. People have been waiting news on that, and we've been doing a tremendous amount of work behind the scenes on that project. Now, just a reminder to people that particular operation had gone offline back in December before the pandemic struck. And then obviously they had plans to do an asset life extension. Everything was put on hold. And right now that's a project that's, you know, very much up in the air. One of the difficulties has been working with, you know, it's a partnership group that's really varied. You've got seven partners all thinking different things or having different ideas, projections, aspirations. We've been working with them trying to do what the province can. And we have, you know, we put to them what the province is prepared and able to do. And so right now we just, again, we're still waiting to hear everybody's, you know, there's a lot of analysis that goes into this type of work. It's very much, you know, everybody that's involved, the significant financial, you know, numbers crunching that goes on. So that one still is very much status quo in the sense that I don't have anything to report, but hoping for the best, because we do realize how important it is. It has a significant number of jobs, and then, you know, that trickle down that goes out into the economy. West White Rose, not much movement. We're waiting to see where Cenovus is. As everybody knows, that was Husky that, you know, is the main proprietor. Husky was acquired by Cenovus. We're waiting to see where Cenovus is, what they want to do. We've had great conversations, and thankfully, you know, just in my time here, we have seen an upsurge in the markets, we'll say, and that, you know, the price of oil has gone up again. It's hovering lately around $68. It's been pretty clear there. Where it goes, it depends. The projections are all over the place. But either way, it's much more positive than it was 12 months ago. And that's a huge project. I mean, you're looking at something that's, you know, roughly 60% done, huge impact, economically on our province. We need to wait and see where, you know, Cenovus wants to go with it, mainly being a West Coast operation, an oil sands operation. We'd love to work with them to ensure that that project continues on. Bay du Nord, there's a lot of positivity around. That's a little ways off yet. But working with them, and again, as people know, Equinor did recently move their Canadian operations from Calgary to St. John's, which was obviously a positive for us here. Overall, I mean, it's an industry that we're very invested in, obviously. We're very cognizant of its impact. Depending on who you talk to, there's a lot of mixed opinions. I've had some people criticize it, and I say, you know what? What the oil industry has done to support our social programming, our hospitals, our schools, it's hard to ignore the money that has gone into the provincial treasury and that helps pay for everything that we've come to expect. So I'm not prepared to give up on it. So we're working on, number one, we're working on its survival, which I think is there. We're working on its future. And then throwing in the fact that there's other opportunity. We need to decarbonize. We've got a good asset, but that doesn't mean that we can't find opportunity in achieving, you know, the net zero target.
So how do you circle that square then? How do you develop and get the most, in terms of money, I suppose, and benefits out of the oil and gas industry while transitioning to a green economy? Because they don't seem to jive, if you will. And is Ottawa on side?
Well, you know, I guess I can only speak for us. I mean, Ottawa has been extremely supportive, and I'll point out Minister O'Regan, who, he's really, really worked hard on our behalf. I got to give him a lot of credit there. Nobody in politics ever achieves everything that people want you to do, but I know that he's trying his best. And in light of, though, the ever-increasing demand to move away from that industry. But I think, I think that we are going to do okay here. It's just, you have to see the forest through the trees. We have to. There's a long time ahead, and that doesn't mean that we don't have tough spots to get there. I don't think for a second, you can produce but make the process better environmentally. Now, I notice someone say, well, it's not possible, it's one or the other. Well, that's your opinion, and this is mine. I'm not going to be giving up on this. We will work, and just 2 weeks ago, the federal government invested about $25 million in different firms, operations, academia, in finding ways to, whether it's to electrify the offshore, whether it's find ways to do things more environmentally friendly. So that's one of the ways that you achieve is that, and the other thing I'd point out to people, I don't see Norway moving away from oil. I don't see the U.S. moving away from oil. I don't see anybody moving away from it. They realize that we must continue to work there. The transition doesn't happen without it, but there is a transition. All the operators, everybody in the industry is working as a part of that, but that doesn't mean you have a full stop and then progress in a completely different way.
Could we be, you say Norway's not moving away and U.S. is not moving away, but could we be leaders in that area? What opportunities are there in the green economy?
I mean, we absolutely are trying to be leaders there. And, one of the issues has been, even in the task force report, which does discuss this, we are not a sovereign nation. We are a province in a federation. So it's not like we can be compared to Norway per se. But I think that we can do our part on a provincial scale to go in this direction. And again, there are huge opportunities when it comes to trying to define that green transition. So part of it is by investing. And again, there's federal investments. And we've been working as a province to leverage money from private industry as well as our federal government to put that research into how do we best develop our petroleum resources? How do we work towards? I'm extremely excited about the possibilities of wind, about the possibilities of solar, the possibilities of hydrogen, and all of it's there. But it requires partnerships. I don't think you're going to see just a provincial government invest in that. Everybody has to have some skin in the game here for the betterment of all. But I've had a lot of really productive, fruitful meetings with groups and entrepreneurs that are ready to move in this direction. They've got track records elsewhere, and we just need to see it here. We need to have some faith. And I think we're going to be able to make smart, positive investments of our, for our taxpayers that are going to result in economic opportunity and a cleaner future.
We've spoken a bit in the province about wind and solar energy in the past. It's been rather limited, I must say. But what about hydrogen? Tell us a little bit more about that, because I think for a lot of people that's kind of a new concept.
Well, again, that is the difficulty there. And again, you know, depending on whether you're talking about it on a small scale, whether you change to a hydrogen operated, bus operation. We've seen people that are taking their fleets and turning them into hydrogen powered. And we have seen operations on this. I know that Nalcor, I guess Hydro, actually did a project down in Ramsey a little while back, trying to transition to see if there's a way to do that. Not a whole lot came out of it. The difficulty has been the cost. It's just, and I think that every month that goes by, every year that goes by, we're finding ways to do it more economically. Because it's one thing to have the technology, but people, you're not going to see that transition over to it if it's just too cost prohibitive to do that. But we're getting closer, we're getting farther, and you're seeing big players that are now willing to invest in that, and that's what we need to see here and what we're willing to work on. So I think that there is going to be a lot there. I know that that the report talked about it. Anything we can do to find, greener ways to operate our civilization, it's going to be a necessity. We cannot continue on the same path. It's just not going to be allowed. It's just not going to be able to do that.
You mentioned cost, and that's one of the barriers, I suppose, for a lot of people picking up an electric car, for instance. The cost is prohibitive to a lot of people. Is there a role that government can play in making it easier to acquire an electric vehicle, for instance, or establish more charging stations across the province so it makes it better for people if they get one?
Absolutely. These are the ways that we are moving. And again, it's not just one player. Everybody has to play a role. So I look at Hydro. Just in the last year, you're seeing charging stations go up everywhere. I mean, we see them from Portavask here all the way to St. John's. We're moving to get them up the Northern Peninsula. And that's what we need more of. And there can be incentivization. I mean, at the end of the day, people will do things for an environmental reason, but people also need a cost incentive to do something. And they're not going to just switch over if it's going to hurt them financially. So again, things are getting better. Even the change you've seen in the last 5 years is tremendous. And when I look at what's going on in other jurisdictions, again, I mentioned Norway, where their electric vehicle sales have skyrocketed over the last little while. So I think we need to have the infrastructure here to do it. I also do think that you will eventually see private business in terms of the retail side investing in this. So if I'm driving across the province in an EV, I'm probably going to want to stop somewhere where I'm able to charge. Well, maybe I can tie that up with what was formerly gas stations or, the different stops where you stop for a coffee and a donut and somewhere to use the washroom. Well, we're going to want these opportunities there. So people are going to see, I think, these charging stations as a way to attract business here to support their other lines. So it's really exciting, but I do think we can play a way when it comes to perhaps tax incentivization on the acquisition of these. There's a lot of different ways you can go about it, but from what I can tell, a lot of people are turning there on their own.
My guest today on Target is the Minister of Industry, Energy and Technology, Andrew Parsons. We'll be back right after this.
This is On Target on VOCM. Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
And we're talking with Andrew Parsons, Minister of Industry, Energy and Technology today. We've been talking a bit about some of the challenges and some of the opportunities out there. What about Muskrat Falls? Is there a way that we can better leverage that asset or a millstone, whichever way you look at it, in any way?
Well, that's something that certainly we're always exploring. And, obviously that one has generated a conversation since the day it was first discussed. But I know just in the last couple of days, we have the Premier obviously talking about the fact that we are under pressure. Rate mitigation is a huge issue for us that we need to advance, that we need to get a conclusion on. I do know that there's been a lot of talk, and where I've been doing a lot of reading is just not just about today, but where we can go. The fact is that we've got 2041 is not that far ahead. We've got 20 years to go on that. And one thing that I'll be announcing, hopefully in the near future, is an expert panel on 2041. I'd like to see the best minds put together to talk about what our opportunities are. Is it a case of leveraging all three together? Is it a case of working with private industry to develop Gull Island. What are we? We have to work with Hydro-Québec. I mean, people can talk about the boogeyman all they want, but that's a consideration that has to happen. So there's a lot of different ways to go with it. I think the positive out of all of this is that we've got a tremendous amount of hydro assets, and we have a continent that's wanting to move away from the old sources of power generation. So I think we are going to be well positioned. But in the meantime, it's just, hopefully we can learn from the mistakes that we've had. I mean, we can learn from the mistake that has encompassed most of this decade when it comes to a flawed project that was not developed properly. But hopefully, again, we need to concentrate on what good can come from that, what good can come from that experience and moving forward with the remaining undeveloped assets, and then preparing ourselves for the future when we know that we'll be, again, when 24-1 comes back, we have the Upper Churchill, there's going to be a lot of conversations as well.
Yeah, that's only 20 years away. That's kind of spooky when you think about it.
It sounds like a long time, but the reality is it's not. It's not that far. So we need to prepare now. That's not something that you wait for. But I'll be working with getting, expertise, whether it comes in generation, when it comes to just partnerships. A lot of people, I like to say that I'm, if I have the skills, I'm good at getting a lot of people much smarter than me together to figure out what direction can we go in that will be in our best interest. And then I'll be a part of that decision-making process.
So where are we with rate mitigation? We can't wait another 20 years for that, certainly. And with the possibility of taxes being increased and some other, I guess, short-term and long-term pains that we must all endure, that's just adding to, I guess, the stress that a lot of average households are facing. So where are we with rate mitigation?
Well, I guess if there's three things I could say is, number one, something has to happen this year. Muskrat is going to be up and running. They had some developments over the weekend in terms of positive news of moving this forward. So that's number one. Number two, we need to figure this out prior to that time, because at the end of the day, number three, we have committed to 13.5. We have not changed from our original plan, which was to mitigate the rates so that we don't have rate shock affecting every Newfoundlander and Labradorian. We cannot allow that to happen. The impacts will be detrimental in so many ways. So that's what we're working on. Do I have anything to report today? No, but I'm very confident in the people that we do have working on this, that are working with the federal government to come up with some kind of plan of how we achieve this. So that has been top of mind. It drives so many decisions within government, knowing what the cost, the hundreds of millions that it's going to cost to make sure that Newfoundlanders and Labradorians are protected. So it's frustrating. It's extremely difficult that when every decision you've made since the moment you've been in government has had this cloud over it. But that, get away from that. We will come. We will find that solution. We're not there yet, but we all know that there is, there is a considerable pressure there, because we need to achieve that prior to year's end.
Is the development of Gull Island a possibility? That when that was mentioned in the Green Report, I think a few eyebrows went up.
You know what? It's always discussed. I've had people talk to me about it, even sort of offhand, people mention it. And the fact is that, it is an asset to be developed. Have I had any serious conversations? No. No, I haven't had on that, nor do I think the recommendations from the Muskrat Inquiry would tell us that it's not something to be undertaken lightly. And there's a lot of work that's still coming from that inquiry that would have to guide us going forward in that development if and when it happens. I do think it will happen, but the when, the how, those aren't things that we are close on yet. But the fact is there's a heck of a lot of potential there. I think it is going to be needed, so we need to find the best way forward. And, we are guided by the ghosts of past in doing so.
Well, indeed. Do you think there's any public appetite for more government-led mega projects?
I think there's appetite in us using our assets to improve our quality of life here. I think there's an appetite for people to say, yes, we have resources that can, if they can bring us prosperity, if they can be harnessed properly and shared with our neighbors to help in the goals of, more environmentally friendly generation. But at the same time, I'm no different than anyone else. Do I want to go through another nightmare like we have on that one? Not a chance. Do I want that on my record? Not a chance. So there's lots of things guiding us. So I'm like everybody else. I'm not going to be scared away from it, but we certainly have a lot of lessons we have learned from that will guide us if and when we get to that particular road.
If and when we get to that particular road, as you put it, is there a possibility that we wouldn't go it alone like we did on Muskrat Falls?
I think that would be a strong possibility just due to the sheer cost of it. I think partnerships are a great thing. Now, before anybody gets conspiratorial, have I thought about who they would be? No, that's not a discussion that's even happened. But I think there's, you know, just looking at the Muskrat Inquiry time with any capital project that's over X number of million, you would, you know, there's a lot of expertise that's going to have to be brought in. And to me, the more partners you have that are sharing risk and sharing cost, possibly the best for everyone. But again, it's a bit far off at this point. We're still, right now, there's a lot more, I guess, time being spent dealing with where do we end up at the end of 2021 on the current, on the Muskrat project, and so many other things that we have to deal with the day to day.
What's the latest on Come By Chance?
Well, same thing. If there's a positive, is that the agreement that we struck back in January with Silver Peak, the operator, has been lived up to. We've got employment levels that have always surpassed the targets that were set out. I think we've expended roughly $6 to $7 million over that agreement, which goes till the end of June. Staying in warm water, which makes it, more likely to find an investor to come in and that wants to take it over. And again, we've been very clear in our position on that we do not want to see a tank farm, that we would like to see a processor. We'd like to see a refinery there. I keep in close contact with, in fact, just before I came on, we have a request from some communities that want to talk to us. We try our best to put what we can out there. And again, keeping in mind, it's not our asset. It's not our business deal to close. What we did was strike a deal that would keep people employed and keep hope alive. We've done that. I'm sure there are things happening, but they're not always, you know, things that we are necessarily privy to, in the sense that it's not our asset to sell or to market. We just want to see it done, and we'll do what we can to help in that process in whatever way we can.
My guest today on Target is the Minister of Industry, Energy, and Technology. And when we go into the next segment, that's the area I want to focus on, technology. And I suspect that's where a lot of the good news it lies, right after this.
This is On Target on VOCM. Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
My guest today is the Minister of Industry, Energy and Technology, Andrew Parsons, and there's a lot of different aspects to that portfolio, and technology, of course, being one of them. You made an announcement this morning with the Education Minister. What do you see in terms of developing the province's tech industry and meeting the needs that are there?
I cannot overstate how much potential is there, how much opportunity is there. And it's really exciting, as you said. Like, there's a lot of big issues that our department deals with, but this one here, this is just a case of trying our best to move as fast as possible to keep up with industry, to keep up with demand, and to basically make sure that we're not beaten out. So today was just one example of us trying to respond to an issue that's been identified. And I've been very lucky, again, going back to August when I first got here. And this is not something, this was not my comfort zone or something that I grew up knowing when you talk about the tech sector. But I've been very lucky to be, have a lot of good people. I look at Tech and Now, formerly Natty. I look at Paul Preston and Craig Rowe, who talked to me and told me about, what the potential was. And one of the things, if we talk about issues, they say, we don't have enough people. We need to speed up and grow the talent pipeline. We need more people. And that's for jobs here in the province, good paying jobs. I mean, right now, that industry is valued at just over $1.5 billion. There's about 4,000 people working in that industry. And the demand, you could see that hit 2,000 to 3,000 easy over the next few years. So today's announcement was a project between the Department of Education, College of the North Atlantic, as well as the school district, where we had 10 schools are in a pilot program where you're going to see them partner to learn from the College of the North Atlantic, basically going in this direction. I think it's Python is the name of the program. They'll come in with micro-credentials. They'll come in with post-secondary credits and tuition vouchers going towards this. again, if we're going to fill this need, we can't just worry about now. We got to worry about the future. And I'm very, very bullish on trying to get all of our young people. Again, if they don't want to do that, that's fine. But they at least need to be aware of the possibilities that exist there. And so today was a great announcement. It's just one of the things that we're trying to do.
Well, in order to succeed in technology, we also need to succeed when it comes to our wireless capability and connectivity. And potentially with technology, you would have the same opportunities in Toronto as you would in St. John's or Conch or Nain or Rose Blanche. But that's not the reality right now. So how are we doing when it comes to making sure that we have access to that?
Huge issue, and I think it's more prevalent, or perhaps even not that it wasn't noticed before, but when you move to online learning, when you move to people working from home, I think we really saw the gaps that that were there just a little more pronounced than what they were. And when I look at connectivity, I always think of broadband, but I think of cell services as well. I just think of connectivity everywhere to everybody. So a couple of things. Number one, when it comes to this particular issue is not just a provincial government concern. We have to work with the feds. It's regulated under CRTC. But you know what? They've come big. Like, I mean, they had just over $2 billion that was allotted for this. They just doubled that in the budget when it comes to connectivity. And we're going to try to get our share here in this province. On cell service, I mean, we did a pilot program where we're working with providers and communities and a three-way partnership to see cell service in multiple communities. The first round was just done. We went and put another just under $1 million into trying to get more communities announced. And I'd like to think that, you know, conversations with my colleagues, whether it was Lisa Dempster, who was on the phone, was on the call this morning, Tom Osborne, it's a concern that's shared by every single one of us, no matter which part of the province we're from or represent. We need, if we're going to compete, we need to ensure that people have the tools to compete, and one of them is connectivity. So I think you're going to see more coming on that, but I'm going to stop now without giving up too much.
Oh, but I mean, what role does government have in that, or is it purely through the providers, if you will? Because some of the arguments that have been used in the past by the providers is, well, we simply don't have the number of customers in the area to justify the infrastructure.
Absolutely. That's one of the tough parts is that, you know, and I've got multiple areas like that myself where there's no financial reason why you would put service there per se. But there's a number of different ways that we're working on this. And again, it ties in through multiple departments. Two things we can, again, we need to work with the providers and, you know, multiple providers to find ways to get this done. We need to work with community groups and businesses. There's a lot of private business out there that are willing to invest. We just need to work with them to do that. And we've seen that in the announcements that we've made. When I look at Sabree up in the North Peninsula, I know Chris Mitchell worked extremely closely with them and they realized the benefit that it would be to them. So, you know, there's lots of different places where we can work on that. We're always going to have a financial role, an investment to make. But I look at it as not a cost. I absolutely look at it as an investment. And again, when you see where we are, when it just comes to the tech sector in general, it doesn't matter. You can be in San Francisco, you can be in Toronto, or you can be working here in the Conroy Valley. If you've got that connectivity, you can compete.
That's right. You're in the Conroy Valley. You're in alert level 4.
We're doing okay, but like everywhere, there's been fluctuations. But I think we're doing okay here.
So, what other opportunities are there in the tech field? I mean, certainly not everyone's going to be a Verafin or see that kind of level of success. But there are other you know, good stories to tell. What are they?
Well, you know what, and it's so varied and across the board. I mean, when you look at like what I'll call, and I might get around, just pure tech. And again, this is so outside my wheelhouse. I'm not the expert at this, but I guess I'm smart enough to figure out where I see great ideas. And then our job as a government is to facilitate, to work, to support and invest. So, and again, you know, it's right there. We are right there in ocean tech. We look at Genoa Design. I mean, they just got a huge announcement on the future of our icebreakers in our country. They partner with a BC firm. I look at Kraken. I mean, Kraken is just robotics. Just the contracts they have worldwide, the work that they're doing, they're expanding. Subsea imaging out in Clarenville. It's one of the first stops I made. A couple guys trained at CNA, And now they've expanded. They've moved offices, I think it's 3 or 4 times. Again, just local people that got the training, but they had the idea. I look with a Verafin, I guess, is what some people would call the gold standard in terms of taking that success, growing that success. And now that they've capitalized on that, and they're a huge inspiration to the rest of the tech community. Colab, I mean, the work that they're doing, they just came up with just under $3 million in venture capital. So we're trying our best to not only invest in these companies to help them along the way, whether it's marketing money, whether it's true investment money, but you've also seen some success recently. I look at Clockwork Fox. They were one of the early proponents of our Venture Newfoundland and Labrador Fund, which was our venture capital fund. And again, without giving up too much, I'm hoping we're going to see more good news on that, where the investments that we've made, investments of people's money in this province, is getting a return on it. And that's huge, because it's not a cost. We're getting that money back. We're creating employment. But a lot of that is where the government needs to get out of the way. We need to let the private industry succeed. Our job is to be the support. And that's where I think we play a role. I look at Genesis Center. They just recently expanded. I look at what the Memorial University is doing for entrepreneurship. Just recently, before Christmas, we announced a new center where we're going to partner on an innovation hub for St. John's. So there's so much happening. I could say that we could do a full one of these just on the tech side.
Well, you talk about, you know, letting them take care of it and do what they're doing. However, we still need to prepare people for the tech industry and make sure that we're teaching kids right up through the various grade levels so that they're, you know, comprehensive in these things. And it really does surprise me sometimes with my little fellas showing me things on the internet as boom, 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 boom. He's just, and I'm, wait a minute, what did you do there? But are we prepared in our schools for a tech future or a tech now, if you will? And are the teachers properly trained? Like, how are we doing in that realm?
Well, you know what? Number one, I would give a shout out, because in a lot of these cases, just for instance, I know that Tech Now is working with schools on funding summer student programs with their firms for schools all over. And when I contact schools in my district, they've got people that are way ahead of me. They're already there. They've got the training. They've got the background. But it's like anything. Can we find a way to do more? Absolutely. But it's a partnership. We need to work with the school district. We need to work with post-secondary institutions to see, okay, what is it we need for these people to succeed once they get here? We need to work with the teachers themselves to find out, you know, what are the different possibilities. I'd like to think that we're absolutely ideally placed to do more with this. But right now we're on a great direction. And you talk about your young fellow of mine today is going to do a coding class after school with Brilliant Labs. And it's something that never crossed my mind. That was just never what I was geared for, never what was put to me. And now seeing that he has an opportunity to do this training with teachers from, you know, way away from where we are now, it's a great thing. His mind is already set there. Now, in his case, it's just about building the world's greatest Super Mario game. Whereas I think those skills that are being applied for fun are going to have a huge impact on him when he gets older.
What about Sea and Sky? I know that a lot of work has been done, a lot of innovative work actually is being done here in Newfoundland and Labrador when it comes to aerospace and ocean technology.
Absolutely. So some of the companies that I just named there are like really there when I look at Rudder. When I look at Virtual Marine, some of the companies that I named earlier, and provincial, provincial aerospace, what the effect that they have on our province is absolutely huge. They play a big role in Gander. So again, we're seeing that rural hub that's strengthened by this. And again, the work that they're doing, not just here, I've always thought of them as the airline that gets me from one side of the province to the other. But what they do in their other offshoots around the world, the work and the services that they're providing, whether it's in surveillance, whether you name it, security, what they're doing is amazing. And in fact, we're trying our best to again be supportive and partner. But that's not our lead. Our job is to be that secondary source. Looking at the ocean side, I mean, the Ocean Supercluster was a fantastic initiative. And we're seeing, you know, again, that's where our strength is. This is where we will thrive. We've been thriving on the ocean for centuries now, and now's our chance to take that inherent ability and combine technology with it. It's a partnership really made in heaven. I'm absolutely thrilled that we've got all these different little things to work together to get. We've got some of the best post-secondary. We've got a great school system that are going to get kids ready. And even the online learning this year, you talk about, I mean, going from last year, so when the pandemic struck, it was just so off-putting. This year, when it got locked down and it went to online learning, I'm just speaking from my experience with my children. I mean, it was amazing. It was absolutely amazing, this ability to I guess, sort of just laterally move from one to the next. It was absolutely amazing. So I think we've got the partners there. And the biggest thing I would say from a provincial government point of view, we've got a premier who came in and it was, you know, in no uncertain terms said to me, this is where we're going, and sort of gave us free rein to run with it. And I've been really lucky since I got there. I didn't have much background, but the amount of really amazing people and firms and companies and again, even professors, I've seen some of the research that's going on. Some the brain power in this province, we punch way above our weight.
Are we limited in any way? And I know we have just over 2 minutes to go, but are we limited in any way by our fiscal situation?
Absolutely, it can make things difficult. But, you know, and sometimes it's not in the obvious way. Sometimes people question, well, we're broke, so why are you doing this? You don't have any money, why are you doing this? And I say, well, I'm not spending it. We're investing it. We need to continue to do that. We need to continue to find that way forward, or we're going to be in a worse shape. So, like I say, the fiscal situation, yeah, it makes it challenging for everything that we do. It makes it difficult for a lot of the delivery of things. But you know what? If we're going to get caught up in that, there is absolutely no time to be looking the wrong way. There's no time to be getting caught up and say, oh, woe is me, nothing we can do. I got no time for it. I don't think any of my colleagues do at all. We need to continue to find ways. We've been given a great responsibility by people to work on their behalf. And my goal is, and our goal is, when we're done, hopefully we can leave it better than what we found it.
My guest today on Target has been the Minister of Industry, Energy and Technology, Andrew Parsons, who is still in alert level 4, as far as we know, at least for the next couple of days. Anyway, stay well. I do appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Linda, and thank you for the opportunity to speak about all these issues today.
Alrighty, and we'll be back tomorrow for another edition of On Target. Do stay tuned for that, and thanks for listening.